This is Louisville's Lost and Found. This unique program features lost recordings of Louisville's best local music from the 60s and 70s, most never heard and all recorded at Alan Martin Productions, formerly Sambo Studios. This music may have been lost forever with the demolition of Alan Martin Studios, except for the efforts of Marvin Maxwell and Ed Amick, who rescued and restored thousands of hours of tapes and transferred them to CD so that you could hear and enjoy these pieces of Louisville music history. And now for the next hour, Louisville's Lost and Found on 91.9 FPK Radio Louisville. Our guest this week on Louisville's Lost and Found here on 91.9 FPK Radio Louisville is going to be Tom Dooley and the Love Lights. We'll get with those guys in a second, but right now, The Exiles on 91.9 FPK Radio Louisville. FPK Radio Louisville, Louisville's Lost and Found, and that was The Coachman, and I'm going to bring in Leonard here. Tell us a little bit about The Coachman, and then we had Exile right before that.
Well, hello again. It's good to be back on
yes,
the show,
indeed.
And we've got Angel Marie there, The Coachman, who started out their careers as the Rhythmatics in town, and in the early 60s changed their name to The Coachman, became the house band out at Whispering Hills a number of years before the premieres, then were club band around town, a lot of clubs for a number of years after that, and that was their only really big record as The Coachman. Went top 10 on Wacky back in August of 68, and also charted on WKLO at that time.
And Exile right
and before that? That was their second record for Columbia. It was the follow-up to Church Street Soul Revival in 1970. Went top 10 on both WKLO and Wacky. And that's always a good sign when you got top 10 on both those local powerhouse top 40 stations. So that was a really big record for Exiles in this part of the country.
Yes, indeed. And that, of course, is Leonard Yates and the very lovely and talented Marvin Maxwell. Hi, bye. Hi,
hey,
guy.
Hey, we're here.
You're here?
Absolutely.
Well, you ought to get on the mic.
It's me. It's Marvin D.
There you go. And our guest today?
My gosh, our guests today are a bunch of old musicians, old groovy dudes, old friends. And there's so many of them, I can't tell you. I'll tell you what, I'll tell you Wayne Barnes. I'll let Wayne introduce the guys in the group. And I want to say this right now before they even Bo is still a professional full-time musician.
Oh.
Bo is. He'll introduce Bo in a minute. But anyway, this is Wayne Barnes, and he's going to tell who the guys are.
Yeah, Marvin, thanks a lot, man. We got Bo Hampton, who played the baritone sax in the Love Lights, but now he did it. I mean, he's a professional drummer now. He's all over the nation. We have Richard Bush, who's a local attorney, but he would prefer to play his organ, and he plays with his... I didn't mean...
Okay. No more lawyer jokes.
Okay. Don't let the drummer talk.
Okay. Let's get serious.
Didn't mean it that way, but...
You know, it came out that way, though.
But anyway, he plays with his son's group, Mike Bush and the All-Stars, and there's Eddie Horde over there sitting down, and he used to play the tenor sax, and he was bad to the bone. We want to say hi to Dr. James Wright, who was a funky bass player for us. I know he's streaming and listening on, so we want to say hi to him.
And we forgot one gentleman, Tom Dooley.
Absolutely, the general.
Gentleman?
Who? Thanks for the upgrade.
Yeah, really? He almost forgot you.
Oh, Lord.
You doing okay?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great, and I wish I could be there with you in the studio, but of course... I'm on a telephone hookup from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, where we have lived for the last, I got 25 years. But when I hear all those guys talking, and I just can see that picture in my mind in the studio of all the guys in the Love Lights, and all those memories, of course, come flooding back of playing all over town, playing in clubs, playing in parties, and we had a great band, had a great time back in the late 60s.
Yeah, indeed. And what we're going to do, we're going to get into that right now. I mean, in a few minutes. But what we're going to do right now is kind of embarrass Marvin. Marvin, come here a minute.
Oh, well.
Come over here, Marvin.
You're going to embarrass me?
There's
give
a
me
little
break.
Band called Soul Incorporated.
Soul Inc.
And what we're going to do is we're going to play the single version.
Is then, Wayne there?
No, Wayne's not here.
Darn.
And what we're going to do is we're going to do the single version, then the LP version of one of your all songs.
Really?
And then we'll discuss.
Well, let's just cuss.
Okay. So let's do a couple here from Soul Incorporated on 91.9 FPK Radio Louisville. Now, there's a band here on 91.9 FPK Radio Louisville that would have probably made it if they had had a drummer.
No doubt. No doubt at all.
Hey, man, did you listen close there?
Would you come over here?
Did you realize how much hidden stuff is in that second thing, the one you just played?
No, I did not.
Oh, man, you're listening to the left side of the headphones. There's a lot of hidden stuff in there. Seriously, I'm not even sure what all's in there, but there's some strange things in there.
Yeah, indeed, it sounded like it. Now, Leonard, you were pointing out this. One was the single version,
right,
one was
the album. Right, the second was the one that appears on the Soul Incorporated CD that's out now, the stereo version with all the studio chatter involved you just heard from 1967 that was recorded. The first one was the single edit in mono off the original 45, runs about 30 seconds shorter without the studio talk involved. And the record did very well, by the way, back in 1967. We'll mention, went to number 10 on WKLO in the summer of 67. Also charted Wacky. Another one of those did well. Made both the local top 40 stations.
And
Marvin was there.
Nobody gave me a dime.
And now, can you repeat some of the stuff that was being said?
Not on the air.
Okay.
No, you'd have to pay for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tom, are you?
I'm here, yeah. I was listening to the tune. It just brings back all those old memories.
You remember who wrote that?
Leonard Yates is the resident library keeper of all of us who had bands in Louisville. And, you know, I was just thinking how unusual Louisville has been, not only back then, but still continues to be a real haven for musicians and bands, unlike any other place I've ever been to.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's going to get more that way. Seriously.
It is?
Oh, absolutely. There's things going on here that people don't know about that's going to blow their minds.
Well, are you going to tell us anything about that?
No.
Maybe we better come back and put the band back together.
I got to stay alive. I got to stick around for it. That's all there is to it.
Okay.
So, yeah, you could come back and get the band together. These guys look raring to go.
Hey, let's do a rock and roll show, Tom.
Let's go.
I'm serious. Let's do a rock and roll show. We don't need to do a rock and roll show this summer, and that'd be groovy.
I don't know if, we'd have to get the trumpet players back. I don't know if Eddie's lip is in shape. You'd have to ask him about that tenor sax.
Well, we have to start rehearsing tomorrow.
Yeah, and lots of bruises.
Absolutely.
And I can still dance the exact same way I used to.
Oh, is that...
Of course, I lie a lot, too.
Yeah, well, we were looking forward to that.
But anyway, this is Louisville's Lost and Found. Our guest, Tom Dooley and the Love Lights. And you were talking about some memories. Do you all feel safe in going into some of those memories, or are they better not spoken about?
They were wild times. You know, we were young and invincible, of course. And I remember, I guess the main memory is going down to Lebanon and playing Club 68. And people would drive, like 100 miles from all around and come and see the Love Lights. We were just real popular there and... those old memories of looking out and seeing, like 2,000 people dancing is quite a sight.
On the tables.
Oh, yeah, of course, the horn section had to follow me around. We would dance on get up in people's tables, and it got pretty wild and crazy.
Wow, so the horn section had to do that? You all must have been in better shape then, huh?
Just a little skinnier. And the thing about the Love Lights, we were unusual in that we were a soul band. I think we were probably one of the only bands that had a full-blown horn section, played a lot of Otis Redding and James Brown and stuff like that. A lot of we were kind of like the blue-eyed soul band of Louisville at that time.
Wow.
We were talking about a gig we did down in Nashville around Labor Day of 68. It was at Centennial Park, you know where the Parthenon is?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And all afternoon, you know, they said that there was 100,000 people there during the course of the day, but and there was just a lot of people, amazing. You couldn't see anything but a sea of people. But
kind of looked like a huge black blob out there at the time of night.
They had been listening to country western all afternoon, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
But we were kicking off the soul or the top 40 section of the concert, which headlined Dionne Warwick, Sam and Dave, a few others. And Tom had he always had the ability to check out a crowd and know what they needed at the time. And this crowd was ready to explode. We came on just kicking it really, really bad. And they stormed the stage, carried Tom off of the stage. We were left vamping on the stage. The microphone was on the stage floor. And finally, they carried him back on. I think we were doing
kids. That's the sad thing about the whole story is they brought him back.
Sorry. He's back. Everybody has to continue to play. Now, that was a wild time. And I remember we had some additional horn players who got up on the stage with us. They were some of the other bands. And we were playing the old the Otis Redding tune, Can't Turn You Loose.
Yep.
And some horn players got up there and played it with us, and as you say, just blew the place apart, and people went crazy. We were having a great time in Nashville.
I think it's one of the best shows. Realistically, I think it's one of the best shows we ever did. I know I had more fun at that one than any place we've ever been.
Well, Eddie, you always had fun no matter where you were.
Well, that's true.
Just a fun kind of guy.
Yes, I'm a great guy. Wonderful.
But Can't Turn Me Loose, speaking of that, we've got that ready to go. And I think it would be really cool right here to play that. And unfortunately, it's not live, and we can't see you being carried around in the crowd. But why don't we go ahead and play that? And what was the, Leonard, you were saying the first single, Have a Happy Time,
was in 67. I think that was before Tom was working at Wacky. Big hit, top 10 both on KLO and Wacky. And I was kind of talking to the guys beforehand. That was interesting because Tom's records, some of them got played when he wasn't at Wacky, got played on KLO, actually, even though that was kind of unheard of when there was a Wacky connection. But this went top 10 on both stations. Now, Can't Turn You Loose, which came out like in the summer of 1968, I think he was at Wacky then, and so it only got played on Wacky. But it was a top 20.
Leonard, they played, the competition was pretty hot and heavy back then between the two stations.
No, absolutely.
But My Groovy Baby, in 68, whenever it was, they had to play it at KLO because they were burning down the request lines over there, and it was like number one or something.
Well, I had fun with it.
But Have a Happy, Happy Time. I was actually at WSAI in Cincinnati when that came out, and there's an interesting little tidbit of information that you guys probably don't know about. On that session, you know, the backup band for Have a Happy, Happy Time was the Casinos, and they were playing a local club. I was a disc jockey at this radio station, and they wanted to do a couple of tunes, but they didn't have any money, and I managed to get together like $300, and we went into the studio together, and I recorded Have a Happy, Happy Time and Bring It On Home, and the Casinos, who backed me up, also did their huge hit, Then You Can Tell Me Goodbye, which became number three in Billboard nationwide.
Wow.
The same year. Mm-hmm. That was big, yeah. That was big.
If you listen to Then You Can Tell Me Goodbye and then listen to Have a Happy, Happy Time, you go, oh, yeah, same group.
Oh, no. So let's do that. Let's do Can't Turn You Loose and then Have a Happy Time here on Louisville's Lost and Found. Then we'll come back and talk some more. Is that okay?
All right.
Here we go. 91.9 FPK, Radio Louisville.
91.9 FPK Radio Louisville with Tom Dooley and Love Lights there. Have a happy, happy time. And Can't Turn Me Loose right before that here on Louisville's Lost and Found. And Tom, that's a heck of a difference in vocals in those two.
Yeah, I was just sort of finding my way. And I was a disc jockey up there in Cincinnati, and that was the first tune that I recorded. And again, it was with the Casinos, and they played a local club, and they were kind of a mellow band, so I was in sort of that kind of mellow groove at that time. And then I moved to Louisville and met those crazy people you have in your studio right now, and they kind of turned things around, and we got a little soulful and started listening to some Otis Redding, and pretty soon we had the Love Lights.
How did that come about, you know, now that, you know, a lot of folks, you know, you came down from Cincinnati, how did this group end up the Love Lights?
He made an announcement on Wacky.
Blatant advertising on the radio.
Yeah, self-plug. Shameless plug.
He said he was going to get a group together, and Eddie heard it, and he called me, and I knew called. Bo. I've known Bo since junior high, and, of course, I was playing with Eddie in the Silhouettes at the time. And Tom came over to Mattingly's house, and, yeah, you guys want to be my band.
Oh, yeah. They already had a band together. I kind of stole them away from somebody there. And I don't know. I'd like to hear the memories. I don't want to hog the conversation here. I'd really like to hear from Richard and from Bo and James and everybody else there, their memories of all that.
Well, I remember it because what you said, Tom, was on the radio that you had the greatest band in the world, and it was just the greatest thing going on, and you were playing at the time. The Can't Turn You Loose was getting some airplay, and you had the greatest band going, and I just knew for a fact that there wasn't a band together yet. It was the studio musicians that played it. I was even asking Marvin if he had played on the Can't Turn You Loose, and he didn't remember who played what on the thing. And
You're not supposed to tell him that.
Oh, well, you know. Well, that was 30 years ago.
Forget he said it.
That's all true. It's all true.
And Richard, with me, I had to. I literally borrowed a horn. I didn't own a baritone saxophone. I borrowed a horn from the school to go do the audition with you guys, because really, when you play the saxophone, if you're good, you play the alto, you're bad, you play the tenor, and when you're really bad, you play the baritone saxophone. So I was playing the baritone saxophone, and you really don't have to play. All you have to be able to do is do steps and play two notes at a time and turn around and just go burump on the microphone. So it was,
right.
It was a real easy job.
Did you ever get that baritone sax back over to Seneca High School?
That's where it came from. I believe that what happened was after I even bought one of my own after a while, I loaned it to, remember, it was Garrett Tilford that ended up playing in the band, the one of the other saxophone players here from Louisville that ended up with it, and you wrecked the truck.
Oh.
Remember the rental truck that you ran in underneath the awning of the hotel, and so they ended up keeping all the equipment. And I believe my saxophone ended up being part of the Avis truck rental thing. So yeah.
That is not the only wreck we had. I remember once we were going to play in Boston, Massachusetts. We were headed up there to play a club up in Boston, which is a wild story in itself. And on the way up there, I had this brand new Riviera. Buick Riviera, and the engine just stopped running near Ashtabula, Ohio. I mean, who would ever name a town that, but somebody did. And then the local dealership there, the guy who owned the dealership, actually allowed us to borrow his new Cadillac. We drove up to Boston, and in a snowstorm, ran in the back of this truck and just smashed up this poor guy's Cadillac.
Oh.
In the meantime, he was back in Ashtabula, Ohio, making my Buick Riviera, you know, like brand new. So we went back there with a smashed up Cadillac in his car back and got my new Riviera back on the road.
Oh, my.
And that was one of your strong points, Tom. You always managed to bring everything back broken.
This is true. I know that voice. That was Eddie. And one time we were headed down to Club 68, and I had a Plymouth Roadrunner. And remember that, guys? We managed to smash that up and had to hitchhike a ride down to the club and just barely made the gig in time.
Actually, if you remember right, you didn't smash up the Roadrunner. You borrowed a brand-new Plymouth Fury 3 from the dealership while they were detailing yours.
Oh, that's right. We had the Roadrunner in the shop, and they let me use one of their cars off the showroom floor. I was really good at smashing up other people's brand-new cars.
I never saw a car bend around a telephone post the way that one did. I mean, it uprooted the post 3 feet out of the ground, broke it over the top, and then Tom.
And you were with me.
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Yes, I probably still have the scar from the seatbelt across my stomach here because that thing grabbed me back. It was one of those new ones.
Well, those other cars should have gotten out of our way anyway.
Most of them did after that.
This is Richard. You notice that none of that ever affected the music. The music was always excellent, let me tell you.
So yeah, we had a tight band, and you know the rehearsals were real stout, and the band by itself was just this real machine unit. We had steps, we had choreography, we had uniforms. We came out and we just rocked the house where we went. I remember one time we were in Memphis. Remember this, guys?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And we went up. So we played a gig in Memphis. Then we went to this nightclub, and we were really impressed because the Barquets.
Yep.
We're playing upstairs. Ronnie Millsap
was TJ's.
Downstairs in this place called TJ's on Avalon there in Memphis. And we went upstairs, and the whole band was there, and they asked us to sit in. And the Barquets, everybody has a bad night. The Barquets were not really hitting on all eights that night. And so we got up there. They were kind of lazy, actually, as I recall. And we got up there and just rocked the house. I mean, blew the roof off the place. And we were a tough act to follow. We were a pretty good band. So when the Barquets finally got back up there, They were a little more lively than when they first started.
Yeah, they woke up.
They woke up. Yeah. Yeah, so we better get with the program. These boys are showing us up, and we were on their home turf in Memphis, of all places.
But that was a tremendous time too. We also met up with them in up in Boston.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We all got our cars towed together.
They like to do that in Boston.
Yeah. Well.
Wow.
It's a wonder we came back alive. The club we were playing up in Boston was. It was in a place called the Combat Zone. I mean, literally, that's what they call this area of town where these nightclubs were. It's called a Combat Zone. Here are these, you know, little kids from Kentucky. We survived. I mean, everybody stay in the dressing room. I wouldn't allow anybody out because I didn't want anybody to get hurt.
Well, they even got our name wrong up there when they put the sign up for the outside. Remember that? It was Tom Dooley and the Blue Lights from North Carolina.
That's because of where
the town
we were in.
Yeah.
Wow!
But that was a great night. I mean, it was a tremendous night. They had the British aircraft carrier, the Eagle, that came in. Plus, they had an American aircraft carrier. Both of them were docked at the same time, and that's when they had all the paddy wagons out that night. We got done playing that night, and we had to stand on the side while we were watching the police and the shore patrol throw people in the back of the paddy wagons.
We got some incredible memories in this band. We had, I remember going down to Florida in the two Cadillac limousines. We played all these big fraternity parties. We were did we play Harvard?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. It was Yale.
One of those big schools
New
up
Haven,
here.
New Haven, Connecticut, yeah.
Yeah.
And then down to Florida, John Fred and the Playboy Band, they played at someplace down there. I remember we were the opening band for people like the Beach Boys and Jim Morrison and the Doors. And Wayne has a great story about meeting Jim Morrison because we all shared the same dressing room back then.
Yeah. Should I tell it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we had just done a gig with the Beach Boys, and I was kind of disheartened after meeting them.
They were jerks.
Well, they had been my idols, you know, when I was a kid. And so back then, things were a little different. We all just congregated in one big holding tank underneath the stands of Freedom Hall.
Locker room.
Yeah, exactly. And the Doors were over in the corner, and we were in our corner. And I told Richard, I said, I'm going over, man. I got to meet these guys. And they were the nicest guys I'd ever met. Morrison and Manzarek, both of them were just great dudes.
So Morrison wasn't pretending to be a floor at the time?
He
got in a fight with the other guys in the band because he had fallen in love for the 973rd time, and he wanted to wear his new girlfriend's sweater on stage, and they said he couldn't wear her sweater. So they had this big knockdown, drag-out fight in the dressing room, and they finally compromised, and he wore her sweater tied around his waist.
Oh, God.
But that's the first time we'd ever been exposed to anything like that. We didn't know you could do that kind of stuff.
But anyway, we're going to have to get into more memories. I want to get into some of the other folks you all played with and some of your other memories. But I thought, since we talked about My Groovy Baby, we'd go ahead and play that. We'll do My Groovy Baby, then Tightrope, Tom Dooley and the Love Lights on 91.9 FPK Radio Louisville's Lost and Found.
I'm gonna make you mine.
91.9 FPK Radio Louisville, Tom Dooley and the Love Lights and Tight Rope. And then right before that was My Groovy Baby here on Louisville's Lost and Found. And I have to ask you this, guys. There is a story about Tightrope, and I want you guys to tell it. But, Tom, my question is, I don't know if you know this or not, but my mentor in this business was John Randolph.
Oh, yeah, John, my buddy.
And he's been on this show. And my question is, he was talking about you and My Groovy Baby. Do you know how many times he had to come in and tell you to get that off the turntable?
I played it every chance I could. I can't count the number of times. But I stuck pretty close to the format. You know, it's just...
Yeah.
We had a band, and we wanted to push that thing up to number one, which I think we did. Yeah, it was number
one.
On
Wacky.
Leonard wasn't at number one.
It was number one on Wacky, number four on WKLO. So that was pretty good pushing.
And that was Bo.
Those guys over at KLO, they never could count.
Bo was the one that kept calling them and asking them to play it, weren't it?
Well, that's exactly right.
Of course, and our girlfriends as well.
Well, that's the power of having such a big band, because we could make so many phone calls in one night, they were just overwhelmed by it.
That's true. Yeah.
There's like 10 guys in the band, and everybody's making calls. So, my gosh, we've had so many requests for this song.
Mom and dad, girlfriends, brothers, sisters.
But the thing of it is, I was noticing again between My Groovy Baby and Tightrope, the difference in vocal styles.
Yeah, that was our, one of my friends back then was James Brown. When I lived in Cincinnati and worked at WSAI Radio, my roommate was a guy by the name of Bud Hobgood. He died on the golf course. What a great way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But he was James Brown's road manager. And, of course, King Records was located there in Cincinnati in their pressing plant. As a matter of fact, Have a Happy, Happy Time got pressed over at King Records. And so I got to know, back then he was not godfather of soul. I knew him when he was still soul brother number one. So Tightrope was, more than anything, James Brown's influence on me musically.
But what I find interesting about that song, Tightrope, in the summer of 69 when it came out, it was the flip side. The Winds of New York City, they got play on WKLO here only at that time and made the top 30, the ballad side of the record, not the soul, the funk sound of the time side. It was the ballad side that charted back in the summer of 69 here in Louisville.
Yeah, it was too black.
Mm-hmm. Well, the black or the soul one that we had was the Don't Leave.
That was
the big one. And I have the favorite story that I always tell about you. It's like our big thing in show business. Tom used to have used to carry a retractable ice pick. Retractable ice pick. And I would have a packet, a baggie, little baggie of stage blood. And Tom, when we were doing Don't Leave, we're playing Don't Leave, and it just keeps on going. It's like this, it just goes and goes and goes. And he's saying, "Don't leave, baby, don't leave." And then we're putting a cape over him. We're doing the James Brown thing where we put the cape over him. And now as we put the cape over him, and he's got this ice pick, and people are seeing the ice pick, and they're dying, he grabs the ice pick, and he stabs it into his heart, and I lean over, and I take the stage blood, and I pass it on his chest. Well, one night I did it to him so hard, I hit him and I knocked his breath out. And so we're literally carrying him off the stage now. There, we've got the cape over him, and he's trying to catch his breath, and we're singing, and the band's doing all this, don't leave, baby, don't leave, and he's got this blood all over him. But he really is passed out because I hit him so hard with the stage blood, man. It was just show business.
It was a pretty dramatic moment, and you would see girls. I mean, it was just, we did this thing with this retractable ice pick, and Bo would come with the blood, and girls would literally faint. I mean, they would think I actually did it. I mean, it was it looked so real. We got it down to where it really looked really good.
So now we got to play Don't Leave. Go ahead.
I was going to say one nice thing about this group and the way it was and the way it's set up and the way we performed. There was such versatility in the musicians and the music that we had, and of course the instrumentality that we had, that we could go anywhere with what we were doing. We were you had a soul sound. We even backed up country entertainers, Ginny C. Riley,
right.
In the past. So I mean, the style of music that we were capable of changing, mm-hmm, on a moment's notice. I mean, and that was one of the fun parts of being with this group.
And they played together so well, which is what really made the band great. I don't know if you could take any member of the Love Lights and say that they were individually these great virtuoso musicians, although they're pretty good, but as a unit, we really played as a unit, and like Eddie said, we could back up anybody. And very often, you know, we were the opening act for, you know, people like Jeannie C. Riley. She would come to town. And Harper Valley PTA lady, if anybody's listening mm-hmm. and wonders who she is. And the band was quite capable of backing up just about anybody.
So who are some of the other folks you either played with or actually backed up?
Shadows of Night up in New York. We went up there.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Box Tops. And Box Tops were in Nashville, I think, were they?
Yep, they were in Nashville. You know, we shared the stage with a lot of people who had actual national hit records.
They did more than call in.
They just wanted to be like us, Tom.
They're, you know, copycat.
Well, Wayne was saying, too, that that last time we were together a couple of years ago, and I didn't remember this, that John Cougar Mellencamp was our opening act up when we played up in Seymour, Indiana.
In Bedford, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
Bedford.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
what a great influence we've been on him.
Yeah. He couldn't have done it without you guys.
He owes us all.
That's right.
You know, it's amazing the Louisville sound out of Alan Martin Studios. I mean, it just there's so much influence that came out of that studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a real gathering of all the musical talent all over Kentuckiana. And even if you listen to, you know, the Love Lights or the Monarchs or whoever you're listening to, a lot of the musicians played on each other's recordings because we would need a clavinet player. And nobody knew how to play that except one guy. So he was, I can't remember who it was, but he played the clavinet. I think he's the only guy in town that actually owned a clavinet. And so he played clavinet on all the on everybody's records.
Well, I have to say something about Marvin. Marvin, we all looked up to him.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, he was the guy that could do all the rudiments and not take away from the band, but invent things. And we were thinking, what? What did he do? How did he do that?
I had all the drugs. just kidding, honestly.
Well, the other thing that they had out there, too, though, was the agency. Bob, what was it, Bob Steiner?
Bob Steiner, booking agent.
It was amazing that this guy could put us in working in New York City. We played up in Brooklyn, and then, you know, the fact that they had such support for us, not only did they have a great recording studio, but they had some agents that really were on the ball that knew how to sell.
Well, you know, that's
how that happened, though? The guy who used to be, Terrell Matheny, used to be program director of WKLO. And Terrell got the big gig at WMCA Radio up in New York City, and he began to play My Groovy Baby, and it got up, I think, number one in New York City, and that's how we got up there.
Well, I don't think it got number one. I got into the top 40. It wasn't number one, because if it was number one in New York, I would be telling people that forever.
Well, in my mind, it was.
Don't argue with the boss, though, okay?
No, we went up there, and we went to the radio station, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you ever stop to think about, honestly, guys, if that studio had never been here, the difference in this town?
I agree.
Absolutely.
I don't know really what it would be, but it would be quite different than what it is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, God bless Ray Allen and Hardy Martin for
absolutely.
Having that vision and putting that thing together. It's
absolutely.
Kind of like, in some ways, like Sam Phillips was in Memphis when he had his recording studio, you know, Sun Records, and got a few local musicians like, you know, Elvis and Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee Lewis and Ray Allen, Hardy Martin, they were Sam Phillips' equivalent there in Louisville, and really got a lot of bands going.
Well, yeah, as a word on them, I mean, anybody could buy an 8-track or a 16-track recorder, but there was a certain vision behind Alan Martin Productions when we were doing what we were doing.
Well, it was booking. I mean, that's how the payback was with them. We didn't have any record companies here, basically. We had
right.
a recording studio.
Yeah. J-Town, the music capital of the world.
The center of the universe. Hey, whatever happened to Bob Steiner? Anybody ever see him or hear from him?
No.
He became a hippie and did something weird. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, he had the drugs.
He works for Bonds.
No, I don't know what happened to him. It's been a long time since I've seen him. I don't know.
It's been a decade since I've heard from him.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Our recollection of Alan Martin was that they were the people who perfected the use of the reverb knob.
Oh, absolutely. They had a lot of reverb out there, and they're the ones that had the garage for the reverb tank, too.
Yeah, natural
echo. With the crickets in the garage.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Hardy Martin was the guy who built the board. I mean, back then, you know, today you can go to a music store and get this incredible technology for a few $100s, but back then that stuff was not available, and Hardy Martin was the genius who actually built the recording studio consoles himself.
Well, absolutely. In any airport that you go into around the world, when they hear that chick or whoever it is comes on and says stay to the right on the magic walkway, that machine was dreamed up and built by Hardy Martin. I mean, he did them all over the world, and that was done right out of Louisville.
Well, he's a genius, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
I want to jump back in on the song just a second, Satisfaction and Don't Leave, which was your follow-up song to My Groovy Baby back in late 68, early 1969. We've mentioned this show a number of times, talking about Alan Martin and the studios and the groups here. Once again, you guys had a national record label. TRX was part of Hickory Records out of Nashville. They had national hits on that label, so you got distribution all over the country on these things. That's why these records are out there. There were copies pressed, and it did sell in markets.
Yeah, we got a lot of airplay. We just were not able, Leonard, to get over the hump there. And the only real national hit that TRX, this is a kind of funny story because, you know, Hickory Records was known as a country label, and so we're signed to Acuff Rose, the publisher in Hickory Records, and they actually created the TRX record label for this new group they signed, Tom Dooley and the Lovelines. But we never had a hit. The only hit that TRX really ever had was a thing called Morning Girl by the Neon Philharmonic. Hmm. We had a lot of airplay, a lot of noise, but just never was able to really bust through the national level.
Wow. And that's too bad, because a lot of bands in this area worked really, really hard, except for Marvin with Soul Incorporated.
I was having a good time.
Yeah, that lazy bum.
Absolutely.
That's right.
I was having a good time.
I do remember getting royalty checks, Tom, for like... $4.96.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Welcome to the big time, Richard.
Yeah.
There you go. But, guys, we want to thank you for being here. I could sit here another 2 hours with you guys because this has been a ball. But, Tom?
Hey, thanks a lot.
Love Lights?
Thank you, dude.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you very much, Leonard.
Good to be here again.
Indeed, sir. Marvin?
I'll be back.
Yes, indeed.
With a brand new show.
Indeed, and I'll be watching for you.
Groovy.
Okay. But thanks again to Tom Dooley and the Lovelights, Marvin, J.P. Tack, and Ed Amick, who's putting a lot of this stuff on CD for us because they found it in tapes. So they're trying to save it on CD for us. And Andy High, our producer. And let's finish it up here with two from Tom Dooley and the Lovelights. We'll do Don't Leave and Satisfaction here on 91.9 FPK Radio Louisville.
Walk my way, tell me you'll stay.